And welcome in, friends. Good morning. I am your host, Lisa Lacey, and this is the show Notes from the Edge, where we have the conversations we should have been having all along. And here we talk about the things you ain't talking about, but should be. And today I have special guest, Dr. Katie Trowbridge. And today we're going to be discussing why capable, intelligent teams just stop working. Sometimes it's not because what they get called lazy or disengaged or unwilling. Sometimes they have learned that following direction is safer than asking questions, challenging assumptions, and offering an original idea. What? So in this episode from Notes from the Edge, we're talking to Dr. Katie, who is an award-winning educator, TEDx speaker, leadership strategist, author, CEO of Curiosity, our favorite word in here, to create. She has more than 25 years of classroom experience bringing the principles of curiosity, trust, and thoughtful questioning into organizations. Her work helps leaders move beyond just managing behavior. Who wants to do that all day? And create cultures where people can think deeply and contribute ideas and take ownership and lead with purpose. Man, that keeps them showing up for real. Together, we're going to explore a lot of things. Most importantly, Dr. Katie is the author of Lead Boldly, Think Deeply, and the creator of the CREATE Method, a framework designed to help leaders develop stronger thinkers and more sustainable cultures. Dr. Katie, welcome in. How are you today?
I'm so excited. So excited to be here.
To the edge. Well, Dr. Katie, we always start out with people's, hang tight, we always start out with people's origin stories, and I don't want you to start out when you were five. I want to know, please don't. we've only got 45 minutes. I want to know, what was the click for you where you realized, okay, I can help organizations help their people increase productivity and be happier while they're doing it? What was the click for you there?
You know, and it's funny because I could go back to when I was in eighth grade, but I won't.
No, really, actually, if it happened in eighth grade, we'll take it.
It's really been a process. It did start in eighth grade in religion class when I was kicked out for asking too many questions and questioning the teacher. So it started there all the way up to working as a marketing manager, where a mission statement came across my desk that said, our new mission is to make our shareholders more profitable. And I thought, that's not why I work every day.
That's not incentive.
That is not incentive. So then I went into teaching, and then I saw a huge, shift in the way people were thinking and communicating and working together. And so as I continued, and then I started talking to friends and neighbors and leaders who are all like, what's with kids these days? That's what I kept hearing. What's with kids these days? And it was even like, CEOs and all those are like, I don't understand these millennials. I don't understand these, Gen Zers. And I kept thinking, okay, we have an issue.
We have an issue. How are we going to solve it?
Yeah. So that's why I had already been doing a deep dive into teenagers and young kids and what they're thinking. And because I started teaching in 1999,
it was a good year for me. I was in Prague on New Year's Eve. Oh, it was amazing. Yeah.
Oh, that's incredible.
Listening to Prince, of course. Yes.
So that really was my, it was kind of a process of, from eighth grade getting kicked out of religion class, all the
for
way up
asking
to,
the whys.
Yeah. Yeah. I really think there's something going on here. I got to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And we love questions in here. And my thing is, we need to ask better questions. That's the answer to all of it. So talk to me about, why do capable, intelligent people sometimes just stop taking initiative, even when they actually care about the work?
Yeah. Right. And I would go back to the fact that it's the leader they're working with or for. And it's probably working for, not with. Right. So it is
that you want to be working with, right?
Right. Because there were times where I went through seven different principals when I was in high school in my teaching career. And there were times I love teaching. Teaching is in my heart. Education is my soul, helping people be better. And there would be principals where I'd be like, I love what I do, but I don't want to work for you. And there were principals. I had an incredible department chair who she kept me going. Like, I wanted to work for her. You know what I mean? So I really think that even if we have a passion for something and we're curious about something and we're really invested in it, if we don't have that mentor who is guiding us, helping us, encouraging us, being that cheerleader, we're still going to shut down. Because
if even we're though put I in care, a box, absolutely. If we are the curious people mm-hmm. and somebody shoves us in a box, it's like, well, okay.
Forget it.
Yeah, forget it. I love that. I love that. So I want to highlight what you said, my friends out there. If you're running a team and your team seems disengaged, remember, when we're pointing our finger out, other focused, we call it, Dr. Katie, other focused in here. You need to take that finger and turn it inward mm-hmm. and go, where's my work? Where's my part in this? Where can I help this? Rather than playing the blame game or throwing names on behaviors that you think you understand mm-hmm. and ask the questions. Hey team, what's going on here?
That's but key. Then,
yes, but be prepared for the answer also. Yes. You know, of course, yes. I don't know how many colleagues are going to go, it's you. It's you, right. Boss. It's you. So leave the avenue open for them to high level say, well, this is what's going on. Right.
And part of that is that you got to leave the ego at the door.
Talk to me about that.
Leave the ego at the door, because sometimes leaders are, I'm the leader. Look at me. You know, like I have all the years of experience. I've been there. I know. Life is changing.
I like the head shake. They get the head shake going.
Yeah. Well, because it's that attitude, that ego, right? And right. I think that like that is part of the issue with leadership is, yes, you may be a leader, but you can learn from everybody yes. around you. Yes,
always be curious and yes. willing to learn more. That's yes. what makes us all better.
Right.
And how amazing to have a team grow together. Yes. Because when you are growing together in any relationship, and you are in relationship, mm-hmm. when you are growing together, it deepens your bond.
Yes.
So when do you feel like the shift happened, when leadership started becoming just managing human behavior?
Here's the thing. I think it's always been that way. I mean, I think we haven't made the shift yet. We need to make the shift into learning how to manage humans and not manage tasks. You know, it's really, I always say it's not about managing the tasks. It's about mentoring, right? Mentoring thought, mentoring the people around you. And I think this leadership has been this way for the longest time. Just do what I say because I said so, or I've been there, I've done that, I know what to do. Instead of this, and that's why I always say, you know, education for years has borrowed from business. It's time that business borrows from education.
Oh.
Because, you know, education's always looked at like, oh, let's look at the business world and how do they run a business? And mm-hmm. that's fine maybe for finance and those kinds of things. But when it comes to humans, think about what education does on a daily basis, whether it's, you know, kindergarten all the way up to adult learning. We are managing a group of 30 people sometimes in one room, trying to get them to think, to be curious, to try new things, to take some risks. We've been managing. We know. Educators know. And so business now has to start borrowing from that, because the way that we've always led, it doesn't work anymore. It just doesn't
work
anymore.
And people are tired.
Oh, yeah. When we did our study, we did a study of 1,000 working Americans from 18 up to 60. And mental fatigue was the number one reason that people are just quitting. It was mental fatigue, fear. They're afraid to speak up. Like you mentioned earlier, like they're afraid to speak up. So, I mean, if they're mentally, it's not physically. I mean, it could be, yes, the baby kept you up last night and now you're tired, but this is mental. We are.
What's causing the mental fatigue?
All this information okay. getting thrown at us all the time. And okay. remember, that's different than knowledge. You know, being knowledgeable is also being wise. I have this information. I know this. I'm discerning what is the best kind of thing to do in the next situation. But this is, I have all this information coming at me all the time, and I just don't know what to think. I don't know what to believe. So I'm done.
Wow.
I'm shutting down. Wow. I mean, think about the algorithms. Think about your people. I'm afraid, that's the fear. I'm afraid to voice my opinion because what if I offend someone? What if my coworker thinks differently? Now we can't be friends. And that's a huge issue as well, because that trust, that psychological safety, that feeling that it's okay if you disagree with me. It's okay.
Let's talk about psychological safety, because that's foundational in every relationship, in everything that we do. It's right here. And everything builds on that. If we do not feel safe, we are not going to be our best selves. Right. And you're right. We may just be like, I ain't showing up.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that, again, is a leadership thing. That, again, goes to the leader. Is the leader creating an atmosphere where it is psychologically safe for me to take the risks, for me to bring up a new idea, for me to give that feedback you were talking about earlier?
Yeah.
You know,
what does it look like to create what does it look like for a leader of a team or a $20 gazillion business to create psychological safety for the people working for and with them?
It's connection. The number one thing I can tell people is a sense of belonging. People want a sense of belonging and they want connection. And if I feel like I belong, and if I feel like you hear me, you value me, I will work for you. I will feel safe for you. That was the other things we found out in our study, is that 44% of people have quit their jobs because they don't feel valued in their thinking. 59% of leaders are quitting their jobs because they don't feel valued in their thinking. So it is that, like, if I don't feel valued, my opinion doesn't matter and isn't taken seriously by an authentic and genuine leader, people are leaving their jobs because of it.
Well, then we internalize that too. And so many of us were devalued as children. That being devalued as adults in the place we spend 8, 10, 12 hours a day is going to bring up a lot of stuff for us.
Yep. Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. And we got to remember that we all grew up differently too. You know, Gen Xer, I'm a Gen Xer. And so I am the, like, head down, just leave me alone. Let me get my shit done. Let me, like, don't get off, because if you make me mad, you're going to hear it. Right. I mean, that's kind of our, like, this is who we are.
Yeah, I got a second up, seven up, man up. So I tried that.
I mean, I think, like, I was told so many times from my mother to you know, snap out of it, you know. And then we have the millennials and the Gen Zers that were raised in very different ways because they were raised by us. And we're saying, oh, wait, we didn't like the way we were raised. You know, I was a latchkey kid. I was told to just sit down and shut up, you know. And so now we raised these kids. So we can't get mad at these kids because we raised them.
You sound like my daughter. She's like, I get this from you. I was like, I saved for your college fund and your trauma therapy fund. Stop it. Stop it. Yeah. Which I did. I still pay for her trauma therapy. I'm like, I'm sorry, kiddo.
We're not going to be right. We're all going to make mistakes. We're all going to screw up as parents. You know, we all blame. Nobody wants to be like their mother, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's part of what's happened, right? Is we have, like, all these offices full of boomers all the way down to Gen Zers. And we're like, oh, wait, we all think differently. We all do things differently. We all act differently. We all think differently. And so we've got to be accepting. In that,
we were all, I don't care what generation you're in, we were all raised differently. We all have different traumas, and those traumas are going to show up in all relationships, including at work. So some understanding goes a long way.
Right.
That empathy. And feeling understood, I think, is so important, right?
Right. Right. And I don't have to have gone through what you went through, but I can have the empathy to listen to you and understand. And I don't want it to be excuses. It's not, sometimes I hear, oh, there's just, you know, kids or employees are making excuses. If you look at it that way, you're not creating psychological safety, right?
Explanations are not excuses.
Exactly. This is... No. I need to understand you. And I'm not saying go into your boss and tell them all your trauma. That's not what bosses want either.
Dump on your boss.
Right? That's not what they want either. But what I'm saying to leaders is say something like, hey, you know, Lisa, you look like you're doing okay today. What's going on? You doing all right? Oh. Just acknowledging the fact that, you know what, your employee might not be feeling the best, might not be producing the best, and you taking the time to figure it out. I tell leaders all the time, get out of the office. Get out of your office. Go check
and see them. That's right. It's enough to go, I see you're a little off today. Everything okay?
Yep. And if I want to share, I will. And if I trust you enough, I'll share. But if I don't, I know that you at least asked me and you cared. And I would say also make sure you're present. So make sure your phone isn't in your hand. when you're asking people these questions. Make sure you're not checking your email. You know, if somebody comes in and wants to talk to you, put your laptop down. Focus on them. Look at them in their face and say, tell me what's going on. I want to hear. But unfortunately, because then again, that's that value, right? I'm not feeling valued because you're checking your phone, you're checking your email, you're not even looking at me, you're all, you know.
Again, it goes back to that see me, that active listening, that what we're doing with each other right now creates real human connection.
Yep.
And you're right. And you brought it, I want to circle back. You brought up the word belonging. Don't we all, we want to belong in the tribe. We want to belong in the community. And again, we want to feel like our contributions are valued. Mm-hmm. So you spent more than 25 years in the classroom and you said, hey, business folks, come learn from us educators. Mm-hmm. What do great teachers understand about human development that some leaders might be overlooking right now?
Here's what I think educators get right. And I'm not saying all educators, just like I wouldn't say all leaders, right? I mean, everybody has their weaknesses and their strengths. But the thing about education is that we, every day, they say that teachers make more decisions in a day than CEOs can make in a year.
Wow.
I mean, you think about all these decisions we have to make right away. This student needs that. This student needs that. I still need to teach The Great Gatsby or, you know, geometry or physics. I still need to teach those things. But I've got to teach it to this person over here who thinks this way. This person over here thinks this way. This person over here is getting a little squirrely and needs to take a recess break. Yeah, I mean, like, I've got.
And this you got 30 little humans in one spot all day long.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
And so they know how to look at people for who they are and where they're at. And then also look at people for where they might go.
Oh, their potential, their possibilities with proper mentorship.
Correct. And like, leaders can't forget that.
Yes. Yes. My husband is now taking over a family mechanic shop, something he said he'd never do, and he's doing it. But we got him a business mentor. Like, you know, he'd never done it before. Mentors are everything. And I will tell you this. On my 10-year long, I started an inpatient rehab at 40 years old, did all the therapies. If there's an acronym for a therapy, I did it. And I still wasn't feeling great. It was transformational coaching that. So I did the looking backwards, saw where I was. I was like, okay, that sucked. I see what happened to me. But it was transformational coaching that finally got me moving forward.
Yes.
We all need to be moving forward together.
Right.
Yes.
And we can't see that. Leaders can't see that as a threat. And so I've seen, like, what teachers see as when a student walked in my door, when I wanted them most is when they walked out the door to be a better human being, to have a better focus, a better meaning. Did I want them to know about The Great Gatsby? Maybe. But what I really wanted them to do is be thinkers, right? And as leaders, we've got to think, what do I want from my staff? I want them to do better than me.
Yes.
And that's a mind shift for some people because
that's hard to do because ego does not like that.
Yes. Correct. Yeah. Correct. Because you want to think I'm the best in the room. But what you want is to make your employees the best in the world.
Because then you're doing the thing, right? You're lifting everybody up together.
And educators know that. Educators are like, let's look at your future, where you're going. Leaders have to be the same way. Oh, here's where you are now. What can you do next? How can I help you get there? Because that's what I want. I want our business to be successful, but I want you to be successful. And how can I help you get there?
So you see what you just did was you took it from that numbers on the spreadsheet into human beings becoming better human beings.
Yep. Correct. And that is key in today's way of leading. That is key. That's how we're going to be creative, innovative thinkers. That's how we're going to create things that actually have meaning to them.
And the side effect will be money. Yeah. Okay. It's going to be money. I mean, yeah.
Because you're going to have a great team who's going to be willing to do anything for you and work like crazy. You're going to help on retention. Those people aren't going to be leaving. They're going to be staying at your job. Right.
Yeah.
And your numbers, your ROI is going to be fantastic because of all of those aspects. And because you hopefully with this great innovative team that now has psychological safety and they're all connected and they're all working together, think about what they can actually create. They can do, right? And that's, I think, the vision. And I always say, you know, it's not that everybody on your team is going to get along. I worked for people I didn't like and worked with people I didn't like, but I still appreciated their value. Mm-hmm. Right. I might not mm-hmm. want to go out for a drink with them on a Friday night, but I appreciate mm-hmm. their value and I appreciate what they can bring to the team. And I appreciate their thoughts and their thinking. That's what, it's not a everybody needs to be nice. You know, it's everybody just needs to be kind yeah. to each other, hear what each other has to say. That doesn't mean that we all have to, you know, have a kumbaya, you know, let's all get together and hold hands and sing together. Like, right. I mean, like, that's not what I'm saying. And I think sometimes people hear that from me, you know, so we all have to get along. No, sometimes some of the best ideas come from that tension, from yeah. that conflict, but I yeah. can have conflict with you and still work with you and appreciate you.
And it's the mentor or leader's job to mediate that.
Oh, yeah.
Right? If you see that two people don't necessarily click, mm-hmm. would have clicked outside of work, how can you get them mm-hmm. to work together inside yeah. of work? That's your job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And that is creative thinking as well in a leader, you know, and going back to mentorship, that leader needs a mentor.
Yes, we all do.
Right.
Right.
So like that leader, and that's what I heard from my research too, is a lot of young people today are saying, I don't want to go into leadership because I don't have someone who will mentor me. I look at leaders today and I think, I don't want that job. Mm. I don't have anybody that inspires me to be a leader. And so then we have a problem. If we're not inspiring future leaders, if we're not seeing their potential,
yeah,
then we're going to be leaderless and that's going to be a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. So mentors, always have a mentor. You'll always be working with somebody to better yourself. And I think a strange thing on the growth journey happens when you are just working on you guys. Listen, observation is not neutral. That's quantum physics, quantum mechanics. Once you observe your own stuff, the people around you just kind of rise up. Mm-hmm. The toxicity kind of takes itself out on its own. It's a really cool phenomenon I've seen in working with people mm-hmm. as they raise their, I call it energetic vibration or mindset. Mm-hmm. Then the people around them automatically come up with them. And then the toxicity kind of takes itself out. Have you seen the same thing?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because I think that, again, it starts with the leader, starts with the educator, and leaders need to start thinking of themselves as educators. Right? Because that's what a leader really is. You really, just because you don't have a, you know, classroom of 30 students does not mean you're not an educator.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, everybody.
You're a teacher.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so I think that and it's that wisdom that comes through. And then that toxic positivity that I'm sure everybody's heard about, you know, oh, everybody's happy. No, that's not true. We all have rough days. We all have times where we struggle.
I'm not okay today. I'm a little off today, but you know what? I'm going to get a hell of a job done today because you're helping me.
Yeah. Right. And because you care and you understand that I might not be at 100%. I might be at 7%. And really no one's ever at 100%, right? I might be at 75%. I might even be 30% today. But I know you've got my back. And I know that if I need something, you are here for me. And that's where that toxic environment fades away.
You've got my back. Mm-hmm. We all want somebody mm-hmm. that has our back. You know, we all want somebody to see that even at 30%, we're still trying to do our best and our best changes on any given day.
Yep.
Great book, guys. If you haven't read The Four Agreements, that's a good start.
That's half a great book.
$9 book. It'll help you a lot. So what are some everyday leadership habits that unintentionally, maybe not even self-aware of mm-hmm. them, discourage engagement or participation?
Closing your door.
Ooh.
And I know there are times when we need to close our door. We need to close our door because a lot of times when you close your door, you're closing your mind, you're closing your heart. You know, keep your door open. I had a principal that was a tough principal. He was really a tough principal, but he had an open door policy. And so we all knew that if we needed something, we could go in and talk to him. But his parameter was, if you're going to come in to my office with an idea or something, you need to know what you're talking about. So be prepared. Yes. And I appreciate that from him because I knew he was tough. I knew he'd ask me a lot of questions, but I knew that he would still listen as long as I was prepared. So I better be prepared, right? So I think closing your door is one thing. I also think the inauthentic self, the not sharing your life with your staff. So You know, we oftentimes think, I can't share that because it'll show weakness. But actually sharing that weakness is actually a strength. And your staff will see it as a strength because that means that you're real. And I think sometimes we put up this curtain of I'm the leader, so I have to have all the right answers.
Yeah.
I have to show that my life is perfect.
Yeah.
I have, right? And so you-
There's a crash around the corner when you do that. I did it. I had the perfect veneer. It was good veneer for 20 years.
Right.
It wasn't real.
Yep.
And right. by the time I came forward, people were like, what was happening behind the scenes? Mm-hmm. I was like, all of this. Some people, I had done such a good job of putting up the corporate veneer that, I mean, people didn't even believe what was happening behind the scenes. So I love that. And, you know, Dr. Katie, I have an interesting phenomenon on my particular page. 75% of the people who engage with my content are senior level and above. I never hear from them. Mm-hmm. I never. They're not showing up to say what they think and feel. And again, leaders, we're not saying trauma dump on your staff.
No.
You know, but let them know who you are as a human. Yes. What are your values? What do you stand for? Right?
Even like, you know, put pictures of your family on your desk.
I mean, do just people little, not?
Oh, like, yeah. No, people won't. They won't. Yeah. There's a lot of leaders who are like, I do not share my personal life at all.
Wow. Not even
and I think, okay, through. That's, you know, your staff is missing out on, oh, I had a great time at my grandson's baseball party this weekend. Yeah. I mean, like those kinds of things. Or, you know what? I messed up. I really thought this was a good idea and it really wasn't. And because
that's that big one. Like,
it's a big one. But now your staff is thinking, oh, wait, if he can mess up or she can mess up, then I can.
We're human.
And saying things like, I don't know. Great question. I don't know.
I'll get back to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I was educating physicians, that was I'd be like, I don't know, but, and then follow up, yes, get back, mm-hmm, you know, find mm-hmm the person you need to go to that does have the answer and always get back. So mm-hmm, yeah, I mean, it took a lot to stand in front of 300 physicians and say, you know what? I don't have the answer to that right now, but I'll get back to you within 48 hours with the answer, yeah, guys, yeah, and send an email out to everybody. So mm-hmm you guys all know how to document better the next time. So right, I think that goes a long way to show your humanness mm-hmm and your real authenticity, and people will respect that. If mm-hmm people do not respect you,
no. No, they don't respect or trust. Trust is a big one too. Cause if they don't trust you, you know, that was one of my leaders I had in my years past, but wasn't a trustworthy leader. And so everybody struggled with that leader because, you know, why do I want to work for you if I can't trust you? You don't have my back. You might say one thing to my face, but then you're going to stab me in the back. So like, those
and it only takes once, guys, to create the cognitive dissonance. And then your brain mm-hmm is like, on I'm it. Done. Yep.
So trust and respect are huge. Yeah.
Yes. I love that. Okay. Many leaders trap themselves between pressure from above. It's mm-hmm tough. It's tough. Mm-hmm. And silence from their teams. How do we begin changing the culture without weighing ourselves down as leaders?
Well, and I've heard that a lot from middle managers, right? The middle manager is like, they're really stuck in between. Here's what my staff needs, but here's what I have to do. Educators were the exact same way. I have parents, I have administration, I have testing, and then I have my students who are bored out of their mind, right? So, I mean, like, we all have that sometimes that we're juggling, like, what do we, because there's somebody at that higher power up here that is saying, here's what you got to do, what you got. And one of the things that you have to do is, again, I'm going to go back to the idea of being curious, mm-hmm, of tell me more. That's my favorite statement.
Ooh,
is tell
that's me a more. Good question. Yeah.
Tell me more.
Question mark.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So even to the administrator who's like, you need to do this, then I would say, that's an interesting idea. Tell me more about how you think I might do that. What are some of your ideas for me?
I love going that. Down- you just validated the idea. That's an interesting idea. Love it.
Love it.
Tell me more
mm-hmm
about how I can get that done.
And then give me some practical steps.
Yes.
Because then you're also, you know, in a respectful way, challenging your leader of, I would love some mentorship.
Yeah.
Can you help me do that? And then the same goes for your staff. Going to your staff and saying, hey, listen, I've been told we need to do this. I would love your impact, your input into how I might do this in an effective, efficient
That's
way.
That's brilliant. Yes. So I've got this hard task. What do you guys think?
Right. And what's key is not going into your staff going, oh, stupid administration. That CEO doesn't know what he's talking about. She thinks, Bob, you know what I mean? Like, it is because now you are being negative and you're bringing in that negative part of it. It's, hey, listen, guys, this is what the leadership thinks we need to be doing. Let's figure out how we can get it done together.
Yeah.
Let's brainstorm. Let's do some creative, some critical thinking. Let's really, you know, let's work together as a team. That's what's vital. And then you're in between, you're managing, and it's a lot for a middle manager. You got a lot to manage, but if you say help me and you're vulnerable enough.
From both people, your administration. I love that idea. Tell me more. How can I do it? Hey team, I got to do this. Tell me more. How are we going to get it done?
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I love that. And what was I going to say about admin? So same thing for me. I was in corporate from the time I was 21 years old, never really had a boss. But what I noticed about the administration, because I was always a consultant, so I was kind of on the outside, is open your door to know what your staff has to do. What made me so good at what I did was I started by doing the work. So as I moved up into a CEO position, I knew what everybody was up against in terms of the work.
Yep. Right. And I think that that's key, because even in the education world, we see it the same way. We have consultants who will come in and they'll do professional development and they've never taught a day in their lives.
Yeah.
Right. And so you sit there and you think, you don't know what I'm doing. You've never taught. And now you're telling me how to teach. Same thing goes in the corporate world. If you haven't, you know, been on the factory floor, if you haven't tried, I just saw a great interview from the CEO of Ford, and he was saying how, you know, he and his father both worked up through the ranks of Ford. And so he's like, I know what it means to be that factory worker. And that what I think is so important is we've got to share, we have to be willing to share our expertise, but as consultants, it can't be, oh, I watched a great YouTube video that told me how to do it. You know what I mean? I've been there. I've done that. It's even out of the classroom. And that's why I talk so much about, you know, we need the experiences in our life that will define us. I'm all about education, obviously, and getting a doctorate degree and all that. I mean, I'm all about learning and the knowledge, but it's also has to balance out with the experience of getting out there and trying it, doing it, failing, succeeding, so that you can say to someone, yeah, you're right. I've been there.
Yeah.
I get it. And times have changed.
Times have changed, and you bring up a very valid point too. Having something intellectually does not mean that you are applying it.
Right. Yeah. You can be book smart and not street smart.
Yep. Yeah. Both are good.
Mm-hmm. You need both.
Be a lifelong learner.
Absolutely. But
if what you're doing, if what you've got up here intellectually isn't, I'll give you an example. When I did the DBT program, 18-month-long program, dialectical behavioral therapy, I had both books memorized. Marshall Linehan, pure genius. However, it was so clinical in nature that it was hard for me to apply in my own life. And so that's where a lot of the methods and processes that I use to work with people came from, that the fact that I, $25,000, 18-month-long program, and I still wasn't applying it because it was not applicable for me.
Correct.
And that's another thing too. All of us work a little bit differently, you know?
Yeah.
We learn a little bit differently.
Oh, yeah.
What works for you may not work for me.
Right.
So how do we acknowledge each other's differences but still get the task done?
Right. And that's what's really key as a leader to create a team. You always talk about the T in my CREATE method is team transformer. And I really talk to leaders and educators about how we've got to start looking at what we do when we're working with a team as almost a sports analogy of, and I'm a huge Cubs fan, go Cubs, from Chicago.
Go sports. I'm not, I just say go sports.
Go sports, go Cubs. But you can't have a baseball team with all pitchers, all first basemen, right? You can't, I mean, then
it's a great analogy.
What's happened is, you know, as a team, we're working for the win together. And what happens is sometimes we put people in groups and we're like, you guys are going to work together. Well, that's great, but I want to make sure I come out on top. That's not team playing. That's not what, you know, what a good baseball, football, lacrosse, whatever team is trying to do. It is at the end of the season, did we as a team come up on top? What's our win loss? Yeah. Right. And so I think that that's where when you, and the other thing too, is that you carry each other, you respect and carry each other so that mm-hmm. if you know that you're having a rough day, that's okay. I got you, you know,
I
as
got
a team.
You again, I got
you. I
back.
Got you.
So the leader has everybody's back. And that is set an example for, even if you
everybody
don't want to go have a drink on Friday night with that person, mm-hmm. you still have their back. Well, let's get to right. your create framework because you just brought it up. So talk to me about your create framework and how it's helping organizations currently. Yeah.
So right now the create really, it started in the classroom setting. And it has now gone into the leadership because I had a bunch of leaders who said to me, how does this work if I'm a leader? And so I've revamped it. And that's my new book that is out. And it really looks at the C is, you know, what's the content? What's the curious thing we need to learn? What is it as a leader that you know, hey, we have this project, we have this, what's the content you really need, right? Because that right. we still have that, right? We still have that project, that whatever it is, that piece
Task
of software.
Has got to get done.
Got to yeah. get done. So what is that? But then are you cultivating an area and in your team, in your workforce, where risk, that's the R, are you being a risk facilitator? Are you encouraging your team to take a risk and try something new? Are they feeling, that goes back to that psychological safety, that if I make a mistake, I'm not going to be punished, yeah. right? It's their consequences, that fear that's driving so many people. But can they take the risk? I was just at a conference speaking to a group of 100 leaders the other day. And I had them all say, stand up if you have at some point spoken up in a meeting because you disagreed with the leader.
How many
stood up? No one stood up. Not one person. So then I said, okay, I was surprised. I was shocked at that. So then I said, can you all tell me why?
I'm the why, like, how, your leaders, question person.
Right, you're leaders and you're not taking the risks. And they all yeah. said fear. So it's yeah. are you facilitating that risk? And then the E is the experience that we talked about, being an experience navigator. Are you helping your team get the experience? And some of that might be, hey, you know what? We are having a problem on the factory floor. You know what, team? We're going to the factory floor today and we're going to all work, right? That's like the principal.
And give them an experience. That's awesome.
Right, but that's like the principal who comes into a teacher's office and says, hey, I'll take your class for a few hours. Why don't you take a break, right? Because we've got to get out of our offices and we've got to make sure everyone has experience. And so we, you know what? You've never worked on the factory for a day. You're going to go shadow a factory worker.
Love it.
Right? So then there's the A and the T, and those go together. The A is the attitude shifter. And sometimes it's our attitude. We talked about that, you know, checking your ego at the door. What's mm-hmm. our attitude? And because what our attitude is will then be reflective in our team's attitude. So yeah. sometimes we've got to look internally first. And reflect first on what's my attitude towards what I'm doing, my work, my people. And then the T is, are you working together to have a team transformer? Are you transforming? You talked about that word transformation. Are you helping your team transform into something that they want to be? Yeah. And are you encouraging them? Are you working together? Are you having them be a team? And then the last one is really important because that's the evaluation. I mean, it's evaluation designer. You know, I had a boss years ago in marketing who on a 5-point scale of my evaluation, I got straight threes. And I was like, I'm working so hard. And she goes, well, nobody gets a 5, first of all. I was like, what? And then she goes, and if I give you a 3, then you have some place to shoot for. And I was like, okay, well, then can you give me advice? I'm like, what can I do? Because I was very, you know, I want my 5, man. I'm like, yeah. what can I do? And she goes, well, nothing. You're doing great. Just keep doing what you're doing. But
there was no incentive in any of that.
No. All. Right. So that evaluation, and it's, you know, like twice a year you get evaluated. And that goes back to earlier, we talked about feedback.
Yeah.
Right. We've got to, feedback needs to be coming all the time. All
be invested in those evaluations.
Right. Like, and it shouldn't
if you're
going
to give it, give them a place to go.
Right. And it shouldn't just be my boss giving it to me. It should be, you know, I was talking to your coworkers and man, they love working for you. Or man, some of the coworkers are struggling. Or, hey, the cafeteria person said you weren't very friendly the other day. What's going on? Right? It shouldn't be just me who sees you once in a while giving you an evaluation. So we really have to divide. And part of that, the last one too, is reflecting. And I always say to leaders, are you the leader you'd want to be led by?
Great question.
Right? So that's part of the, you've got to be reflective of, okay.
Which requires brutal honesty and you may not like the answer you get.
Right.
That's some serious excavation right there, mm-hmm. personal excavation. Yep. A lot of self-awareness.
Yep.
That's why mentorship is so important. Yep. And guys, when you have a mentor, make sure it's a mentor that will call you out on your BS, please. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. That's what you need. Yeah.
Right. And that's beautiful. That evaluation. It's got to be something that is honest and open and authentic. Yeah.
I love it. I love it. Well, okay. Tell us about your book. Tell us about the book.
So I have several children's books out, and I have other books for leaders, but this or other books for teachers, but this one was specifically for leaders. And it really is like a day in a class. So each chapter is a period in your day, from curiosity lab to, you know, to all those, like, to recess. We have a fire drill in there because, you know, we have a lot of fire drill leadership going on. and recess is important. We, as adults, we need recess time. So even when I go in and I do my consulting, we always do some kind of play together as a team. And then talking about lifelong learner and graduation. So it really shows you how business needs to start borrowing from education. And it gives a lot of examples from education, from businesses, about taking risks, and walks you through the CREATE method. So it's taken me years. You and I were talking about that earlier. You know, you invest years of your life into the things that you do, and lots of experience, lots of research. But I'm really, really proud of it. And I think from what I'm hearing, from the feedback I'm getting, it's helping a lot of leaders kind of reframe their view on leadership.
And that's where it starts. Right. That's where my healing started. I had to reframe one thought at a time. Mm-hmm. And it started with the thought, I'm so stupid. I'm such an Eva. Mm-hmm. I'll never have healthy relationships. And the statement of fact is, I'm actually a highly intelligent person. So one thought at a time, one person. Yeah. Right. Okay. When you work with organizations, what do you offer? Do you offer workshops? Do you come in for 8 weeks? What's that kind of look like when people want to reach out to you?
Yeah. Yes. And so mentorship, coaching, that kind of thing. We have some online courses that people can take if they want. Cool. But when I work with them, it really is, I come in, I work with their staff. I can be a day, it can be a half a day. But then I am a firm believer on follow-up. So, you know, you can't, it's not a one and done kind of mentorship or leadership training. It's something that needs to be continual. And so I really encourage companies that it's, yeah, I can come in and do a keynote and get everybody on that high, but you got to have that follow up and carry through. So I love doing workshops, are probably my favorite thing to do, and working with the leaders on problem solving. And here's what we're facing. What can we do better? And then really getting in there and getting to know them. That's my favorite thing.
I love it. I love it. Where can people find all your stuff? And guys, you don't have to write this down. We're going to make sure it's all in the links. But Dr. Katie, where can people find you?
KatieTrowbridge.com.
Easy peasy.
Yeah, easy peasy. Katie, and the book is everywhere. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Bookshop, anywhere you get your books, you can get that. But yeah, otherwise, KatieTrowbridge.com has all my information and all my resources on there.
Lovely. And friends, we will make sure you have it everywhere that we plaster this beautiful conversation. And leaders out there, make these changes, you know, again, one thought at a time. Start
one,
with you.
One day at a time. You can't all of a sudden flip a switch and be like, oh, now I'm going to be this great leader.
Yeah.
It takes time and trial and error.
Yeah. Yeah. And
give yourself grace.
And if you're on a team and you think your team needs some improving, reach out to Dr. Katie too, mm-hmm. and maybe make the referral or recommendation that your boss or leader, reach out to her, because I think you're absolutely right. Curiosity is where everything mm-hmm. begins. And it's what I love about curiosity is, on David L. Harkin's map of consciousness, we've got like happiness and joy mm-hmm. and ecstasy mm-hmm. is at like a 500, but curiosity sits in that willingness space. And even if you don't know what the next step is, if you even say to yourself aloud, I am willing to consider, maybe it's mm-hmm. a task you don't want to do, but I am willing to mm-hmm. consider doing this task, your whole physiology changes. Mm-hmm. It's the coolest thing.
Yep.
One word. Curiosity, willingness, yep. beautiful place
foundation
to be.
Foundation of it all. Yep.
Yes. All right. Well, Dr. Katie, we always close out with two questions for our guests. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
First question, in your own life, what did you perform in order to survive? And what did dropping that role mask or performance do for you?
I was one of those shapeshifters.
Ooh.
Until around, until probably around 30. Mm-hmm. I was, whatever you need. I remember I was a pastor's kid. So I was one way in church. I was one way with my friends. I was one way at school, whatever you need to keep you happy, a little bit of that people pleaser. And it really was until I got into college, learned how much I love education, and got into the classroom. I was 30. I remember sitting with my mom saying, I'm not happy. Yeah, I was married. I had two kids and I didn't feel fulfilled because I was trying to make everybody else happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that really, and I remember once I got in the classroom and started having this as my, that as my space, that totally made me be Katie. I was Katie then.
I love that. You got to drop the role mask in performance. And how did that feel? What did that give back to your life?
Freedom.
Oh, I love the word freedom. That's freedom. What we all need. Yes. Mm-hmm. And freedom courage. To be who you really are and courage mm-hmm. to continue to take those risks and get out of your comfort zone.
Yep.
Beautiful. All right, Dr. Katie, what do you wish we were having conversations more about? What do we need to be talking more about?
Conversations. I mean, honestly, we need to be having conversations about conversations. Like, we just need to be having conversations.
Yeah, human conversations.
Human conversations. Tell me more.
Eye to eye.
You know, that's interesting that you think that way. I don't, but I would love to hear why you do. Like, why are we not having, we're just defriending people. You know, or we're
we're so connected, but we have never been so disconnected.
So disconnected. I'm so lonely. And I wish we would start admitting that. The Atlantic had a big article in it, Newsweek as well, about we're just in an isolation crisis. And we've got to start talking about that. We're lonely.
Yeah. So let's connect with each other.
Let's connect. Let's have a conversation.
Let's have a conversation. All right, my friends. Dr. Katie, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. This was amazing. We have so much to learn from you. Everybody, pick up Dr. Katie's book. Definitely book her for a workshop. As you can see, she's got fabulous energy, but also I really think has the capacity to really transform what may not be working for you. Mm-hmm. And friends out there, don't forget to ask yourself this question. What are you performing in order to survive? And are you willing to consider what greatness may happen in your life if you drop the role, the mask, or performance? I'm your host, Lisa Lacey, and we'll see you at the edge.